The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
Tuesday has arrived, and not a moment too soon. It's also the first day of summer, but you needed me to tell you that. Welcome to the program on a Tuesday afternoon. Let's not waste another moment and get right to it, where the Texas Longhorns in the headlines. Texas and Oklahoma, they're both in the College World Series. One of them still is. Should they be permanent opponents? Seems common sense. Kirk Bowles writing about that in the Austin American Statesman. Always great to catch up with Kirk, who we've talked to many, many times over the years, somebody whose voice is listened to often in the Austin area. Kirk, great to have you back on the program. It's been too long. How are you?
I'm good. Ready to start summer, Paul.
I don't blame you. When we talked to you last year, I remember the day after the Texas OU announcement, I assumed if I had said, Kirk, you'll be back with us on the first day of summer in 22, my thoughts were we would be getting ready to see Texas in the SEC, but we haven't seen that yet. What's going on?
Well, that's a nice dream. Not much is going on, unfortunately. Not as much as I think everybody would like. Probably Oklahoma and Texas more than anybody. And to a certain extent, maybe the Big 12 would like to move on with their lives, too. So this is still the longest-running divorce probably in history, Paul. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem like it's changing anytime real soon.
With the Big 12 commissioner up in the air, when that happens, is that a possible step to expedite this, or do you think it's on the slow track regardless?
Well, it's on the slow track because Texas and Oklahoma want to leave on the cheap. And I think if you get new blood, fresh blood in that chair, it would be helpful. Because I think if you're the leader, the new leader of the Big 12, you realize this is an untenable situation. I mean, it goes beyond awkward. And for us to think there might be three more years of Texas and Oklahoma, I mean, forget the horns down, which is always hard to forget because it never goes away. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. So, you know, and I've written more than once, Paul, just pay the freight, okay? If you're Texas and Oklahoma, this is what you wanted. You get what you want. You put the survival of the Big 12, an entire conference, at risk before they invited these four teams. So just pay the freight, pay the piper, and go on down the road.
Kirk, it seems like Texas can easily do that, but I keep hearing that Oklahoma is not as well healed as the Longhorns. Is that? Do you think that's part of the problem?
That, and it's, you know, the whole being cheap, it's Texas arrogance, and everybody assumes they got a money printing machine in the basement over at the UT Tower, which maybe they do. Red McCombs, legendary UT booster, you know, his name's on the softball field in the business school. And, you know, he said, we've got more money than the Vatican. And he's one that should know. So, yeah, I think there is something to that, too. And it's almost comical, too. It's almost like, you know, the headline should read, Texas and another school will leave for the SEC, because Oklahoma barely gets mentioned. And quite frankly, current year aside, and the Texas excellence in nearly every sport except football aside, Oklahoma looks much better prepared to join that SEC. But I think there is some truth to what you're saying, Paul.
Talking to Kirk Bowles, I know you talked recently to the AD out there. What did you learn?
Well, they both said, we've got to play each other. We got to be permanent rivals. They both told me they've been assured they will play annually. A&M is a little more iffy, and that's clearly the second biggest rival for Texas. Some might argue the standing, and some people might say, well, you know, A&M and Texas started playing in 1984. They're a longer standing rival than Oklahoma is. But if you just consider the significance of the rivalry, and there's a lot of hatred to go around, as we all know. But, you know, most people, if you're listing like the top five rivalries in college football, to me, Texas-Oklahoma has to be up there. It's right next to Michigan-Ohio State. You know, as far as the rivalry, you got a split stadium. You know the whole road. And Texas has always looked at Oklahoma as an equal, and Oklahoma's been a lot more equal lately if you check the record books. But Texas always kind of looked at A&M as a little brother, and I think they should play because, to me, the two biggest things in sports, Paul, are always going to be rivalries and unpredictability of sports, which we're seeing in the College World Series this week.
Yeah, so true. We've gotten to hear quite a bit from A&M fans over these many years, Kirk, about how they view, what do they call the Longhorns, the tea sippers, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we get all that. But you alluded to it with Little Brother. Can you expound on the view of College Station from Austin?
Yeah, and I think the Little Brother scenario pretty much fits because, you know, they've always been linked. You know, they share that permanent university fund that Texas Tech is sued to try to get in on those billions. But, you know, Texas has, they've dominated that series. If you look at it, they've won twice as many games. I don't know off the top of my head, but it's something like, it's 75-35, something along those lines. And A&M, you know, their last and only national title came in 1939. So that's been a minute. And I think A&M has kind of always chafed under and about the relationship with Texas. You know, you can go back to the Longhorn Network, Paul, where when that was being created by ESPN, DeLoss Dodds, the athletic director of Texas, went to Bill Burnett at A&M and said, what if we share this? What if we make it kind of a joint Longhorn Aggie network? And the Aggies turned it down. And so Texas signed up for it, got $15 million a year, still getting it. So, you know, that's kind of the backdrop of this whole rivalry. But, you know, intense rivalry, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's, you know, but it's not quite the border war that Texas-Oklahoma is. And it hasn't really had the national implications that Texas-OU does annually.
Talking to Kirk Bowles. Kirk, it's been about 5 weeks now since the Nick Saban Jimbo Fisher feud went national, and we're so caught up into it. I don't know if I've really had a chance to talk to you or your colleagues out there about how it's being viewed from Austin. I'm sure with great joy. Explain.
Well, it's kind of nice if Texas is not in the middle of some controversy. I think they probably enjoyed that part of it, and I think most people looked at it like, you know, Nick, you're protesting too much. And most of us that cover Texas saw it probably as a rallying cry for Alabama boosters to step up to the plate with their checkbooks. And, you know, if you still want to be Alabama like we have been, as long as Nick Saban has been there, you know, it's going to come with some big checks. And A&M has been writing them. And even though Nick said, I didn't say they did anything wrong, well, he kind of did when you said A&M bought this whole recruiting class. So I think Texas kind of looked at it with amusement a little bit and just glad they weren't involved with it for once.
Well, they will see Alabama Nick Saban pretty early in the season. So let's get to the real nut of the matter. What are the Longhorns going to look like after what seemed like a disastrous opening year for Steve Sarkisian?
Yeah, I don't think you could mince words too much. 5-7 is disastrous, and it's life-changing when you're at Texas. And not that they've not had some losing seasons. Tom Herman had a winning season every year for 4 years, but Charlie Strong dipped his toe in that territory. So, I mean, we still know this is a program that hadn't won double-digit regular season games since 2009. So that's been a minute. Yeah, that was pretty much an inexplicable season, and you know, I think they had a top five recruiting class. You got a ballyhooed quarterback coming in from Ohio State who originally committed to Texas, and Quinn Ewers hasn't been announced as the winning quarterback. But you know, I've got two announcements. Christmas is going to come on December 25th, and Quinn Ewers will be the starting quarterback for Louisiana Monroe September 4th. So I think most people believe that's going to happen. Now, I don't think he can turn around a 5-7 season overnight. They would settle for, you know, being in a bowl game next year. But I think they're really cautiously hoping that they can win 8 games. You know, everything went perfect, maybe 9. But at least 7 and go to a bowl game. That should be the minimal standard and hope for this program.
What is the conversation about the recruitment of Arch Manning, considering you've already got a 5-star at the helm and someone who was on the same level as Arch Manning a couple of years ago?
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, Quinn Ewers hadn't started a game yet, and Hudson Card started 2 games and had to use disastrous as an adjective again. That start against Arkansas didn't go too well. So, you know, you've got 2 quarterbacks that have 2 starts that have won 1 college game. So it's, you know, it's not exactly a proven commodity. So the whole Arch Manning thing, it just sucks all the oxygen out of the room here now, Paul. And they're just waiting with bated breath for the announcement that I don't know if it's coming this week or next week, probably before the summer's over. But Texas really liked its chances of getting Arch Manning. And the fact that, you know, they're still in this derby with Georgia and maybe Alabama, it says a lot for Sark and the faith that they have in this program, despite a 5-7 record. So, you know, they got a commitment from Newman teammate, Will Randall, tight end teammate of Arch Manning's, and that's never bad news. And I don't think people should get carried away and say, well, now we got Arch, it's a package deal. But, you know, Arch Manning is his own man. So I think if I had to guess right here today, June 21st, I think he's probably leaning toward Texas, or they wouldn't even be in it anymore. And the fact that they like Austin, the family, that they like Sark, that they know he's coached quarterbacks from Carson Palmer and Matt Leinart, Jake Locker, you know, Mac Jones, Matt Ryan, he's got a good pedigree there. Now, it'd be nice if he'd win more games, and I think I truly think, Paul, if he'd won 7 or 8 games last season, it might have been a slam dunk that Arch might have already announced for Texas. So I don't think the family is totally 100% behind Texas right now, but I think they've got a more than healthy chance. And I might even give Texas, you know, a 60-40, 70-30 edge over Georgia at this moment. But, you know, again, that can change in an hour.
Kirk Bowles trying to take some steam away from Danny Sheridan's business there, giving out odds on the program. Kirk, it's always great to have you on. And by the way, I would say you're probably right. I can't remember one like this. I mean, certainly Texas has had monster athletes over the years, but maybe it's the Manning family name. I don't know. But this one seems to have garnered more attention than anyone I can remember.
Yeah, Mac was in on Eli when Eli and Chris Sims were coming out of high school, and I think finished in the last 2 or 3 for Eli's services. So, you know, I do think they're in the picture despite their record. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting summer around here, but it always is.
Kirk, it's great to have you on. Hope to see you soon, and hope Texas moseys on over here before too long. We're ready.
I hear you. Good to catch up with you,
Thank
Paul.
You, Kirk.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
One of the all-time greats, Kirk Bowles, has been out there for a legendary run as the sports columnist in Austin, and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
We have Jim Donnan on coming up at the top of the next hour, Rittenberg and Matt Hayes to defend Kirby Smart as the best coach in the SEC. I don't know. Does anybody agree that Kirby Smart is the best coach in the SEC right now? Darryl is up next.
Not just the best coach in the SEC, but the best coach in college football right now. Paul, did he say
Texas, really? What's that?
Did he say Texas is a 70-30 favorite over to get Arch Manning?
I thought he said 60-40.
He said 60-40, 70-30 is what
okay.
he said.
That's what he said. Okay.
Arch Manning can go out there to Texas. You want to go play in the Alamo Bowl? Go ahead. You know what I mean? You want to be protected by 3-star offensive lineman? Go ahead. Or he can go to Georgia and play for a coach and an offensive coordinator that's going to develop him and ensure that,
hey,
you know,
Darryl, I appreciate you saying all this, but why don't you call Arch Manning? Don't bother us with this nonsense.
Paul, Arch has Georgia on his mind. End of story, okay? Paul, you heard what Lane Kiffin went on. Lane Kiffin's back at it again with his little doohickeys. You see what he did, right, on Father's Day?
You know, I really don't – I don't pay much attention to social media. I don't get social media. Isn't that what Jimbo said, Murray?
Well,
I don't get Twitter.
I don't get them channels.
That doesn't come in on my Slice Bread account.
Trying to make fun of Kirby. You know, let me ask you this. Lane Kiffin – has been fired twice, right, as a head coach?
Well,
he has.
Well, he's been fired at the Oakland Raiders, and he's been
fired as a head coach at
USC. Yeah, he's been fired twice as a head coach and once as a coordinator at Alabama, even though he already had another job.
Okay, how many SEC head coaches, other SEC head coaches outside of Mike Leach has been fired?
Well, let me think.
As a head coach?
As a head coach.
I don't think there is anybody else.
There is one, no.
So Lane Kiffin's been fired twice as many times as all the other SEC head coaches, right? Pretty much.
Well, there's 14 SEC head coaches, and we have not come up with another one who has been fired as a head coach. Correct.
Is Lane Kiffin the only one who's ever been on a team, and you know, as a coordinator, and they play for a national championship game, and he'd be kicked to the curb?
I think he owns that distinction. Yes.
I would probably say so also. But you know what? I went out there and looked. The odds have Georgia and Alabama right now playing again for the national championship. Paul, if that's how it all plays out, when that game comes, can we, like, use the transfer portal to transfer Jameson and that other receiver back to Alabama just for that one game so they won't have any excuses? Because if you go – I went back and watched that game, Paul. You know what? Alabama would have won that game, probably would have won that game, even without those two wide receivers, if they would not let A.D. Mitchell catch that 40-yard touchdown pass after they got a turnover and took the lead and let Georgia come right back. If they had it on the next possession, let Georgia just run all over them, okay? Run all over them, march down the field, and then Todd Monken called a beautiful, beautiful third-and-one play on a pass play that our tight end went into the end zone untouched. They would have probably won the game. They would have probably won the game without those two wide receivers if their quarterback hadn't threw a pick six at the end. They would have probably won the game. You know what I mean? But if we play them this year, we probably are, okay? Because that's the two best teams in college football, no doubt about it, above all the rest, to include Ohio State, to include Texas, to include everybody else, okay? I just hope those two receivers, we can transfer them, because I don't want no excuses. You know what I mean? I don't want no excuses this time. Let's Destin Bennett beats them again. Go Dawgs. See you, Paul.
John is up next in Louisville. Hello, John.
He has a PhD in Georgia fandom, doesn't he?
Yeah. Dr. Darryl.
It's Dr. Darryl. Is that a new Father's Day tie?
It is not. This is a tie that I wore a couple years ago, and I quit wearing it because it was too bright.
I always notice the old clothes you have on.
Yeah, no, I don't buy any new clothes. I've got so many ties in my closet that I hate that I could wear all of them.
Shout out to your show's co-general counsels, William and Augie. They kept it civil the other day on the phone feud, and they acted like the gentlemen professionals they are.
You're right.
Yeah. And I think Augie keeps his consigliere title since he seemed to have helped defuse the situation. But I was going to tell you a couple of things. Ohio State Legislature, about a week ago, passed a resolution asking the NCAA to return their 2010 football season wins and losses. Apparently, this is because of the NIL.
Right. Yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah, it's kind of like the one Bush wanting his Heisman back. And I was going to mention, I've got a question for you, but first, I was going to mention the best town or city for restaurants is definitely Chicago. You can go to Gibson's for steak. You can go to Rosebud for Italian. They've got great deep dish pizza and Pegasus for Greek. I mean, you could eat in Chicago for a month or two and go to the same restaurant.
I've had both my parents lived in Chicago and my sister lived there after when I was in college. And I almost went to work in Chicago. So I spent a lot of time there. And you're right. It is probably underrated but in terms of ethnicity, culinary from ethnic groups, I don't think you'll find a better place. And
I
will tell you this though, I've never been wild about Chicago deep pan pizza though.
Oh, that's one of the most famous dishes.
Yeah, I like the thin pizza any day of the week. That's just a personal preference, but everything else in Chicago
New York
is phenomenal. I like New York pizza.
Yeah. Best college experiences for just the campus only, Notre Dame. I've been to the Whiteout at Penn State, which is 106,000. I've been to the, what they call it, the Mace Out, 110,000 at Ann Arbor. The neighbor took me to the Ohio State game, and what I liked about it was going down on the field. So definitely this year, I'm going to drive down to the Alabama-Texas A&M because I want to get on the field. I think that will be the best college experience this year. And then I have one question for you, Paul, and I want you to kind of step out of your comfort zone. Who do you think is going to win the college baseball championship? And you can use Randy as a lifeline over there.
I've already predicted Arkansas. So, Randy, who you got?
A&M's looking sharp.
A&M still got to win today into tomorrow. But I am Ole Miss. I'll double down on the Ole Miss Arkansas battle. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's head to the break. We put out this tweet before the show today. Best place to eat in the SEC footprint, restaurant and location. We're just having some fun here during the dog days of summer. Today is day one of summer, the longest day of the year.
Yep.
This feels like it's been the longest 29 minutes of my life. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome back. It's great to have all of you with us here on this Tuesday afternoon. Let's get right back to the calls and check out Will, who is in North Carolina. Hello, Will.
Hey, Paul. Just got off work and packing, but I wanted to call today and thank all the callers. And you're a good dude. I don't care what Jim from Tuscaloosa says.
No one. Thanks for the. No one cares what he thinks.
Thanks for the suggestions. And on places to eat, and I promise I won't take a loaf of bread and bologna to eat down there while I'm there. I will go out, and I wrote some down, and maybe next week I can call and give you some reviews.
But that would be great.
The reason I called is I know you're a big Memphis dude, and I was going to see what you thought about the new Elvis movie that was coming out at the end of the week. Have you heard about it?
Tom Hanks is playing Colonel Parker. Yeah. Definitely want to see it. Elvis was he grew up in Memphis, and there's always an Elvis connection or an Elvis sighting. And I was in Memphis the day he died. It was quite extraordinary.
Yeah, I didn't know if you sung backup with him or your band played Paul.
We really hung out in different sides of the tracks. I did see Elvis once in concert, and I picked. I tried to see him earlier, but we couldn't get in. But when he was on his turned out to be his last tour, he came through Knoxville when I was a student there, and I went to see him, and it was really sad. He was close to death. It was about 6 weeks before he died, and you could tell he had done one concert tour too many.
Well, by that time, he was in bad shape, I guess. Yeah.
It was really remarkable to watch. He was still a young guy when you think about, what was he, 42 years old. But, I used to work when I was in college. I worked at a department store. And the closest I ever came to Elvis was at 5 o'clock, or I think it was 5:30 on Christmas Eve. I worked at a downtown store. And Elvis would come as soon as the store closed, and they gave him an hour to literally go through the store, you know, pointing and buying stuff for all his friends. And I caught a glimpse of the entourage, but they made sure that since I was summer help or winter help in this regard, they got me out of there pretty quickly.
I think this is the movie that Tom Hanks actually like. Called Corona or something like a couple right when it come out. But I mean, Elvis is a very serious topic to the South. I know the man that made the film made like The Great Gatsby or whatever. I've been looking into it. I mean, Elvis is a big figure to the South. So I'm excited.
I'll tell you one more story. Well, the night he died, which was August 16th, 1977. I was in college at the time. And a friend of mine, who was the editor of the school newspaper, had a job at the. It shows you what a great aspiring journalist I was. I was working at the department store, selling men's suits, and he was working for the local newspaper. I was never good enough to get an internship, and I was probably making more money selling suits, by the way. So Elvis died late in the afternoon. The guy called me and he said, you know, he's down the street. He said, here's what I think we ought to, he said, let's head out to Graceland tonight. So we drove out to Graceland and I had been there before. I knew there was a side road. So we went up this side road and we climbed over the wall at Graceland and got inside the compound and went to the guard shack. Which was very close to the house, and he interviewed the guards and everybody, and he got a great story, and I tore my pants climbing over the fence. But I worked at a men's store, so I could go right in.
Yeah, there you go. All right, yeah, I mean, I'll be at the ball games. But
well, listen, you give us a ring at the Braves game, and you have a great time, Will, and take care of yourself, and let's check in with Pat. Who is up next? Hello, Pat.
Hey, Paul. Thanks. The Last Resort in the Classic City. That would be my suggestion for the best restaurant in the SEC. We got to talking about Manny Maloof's Tavern in Highland Park yesterday.
Right.
And I never got to talk to you about why I called yesterday. There's half a dozen major fronts in college football today. I mean, the transfer portal, NIL, the college football playoffs, the leadership transition at the NCAA, you got the two schools coming into the SEC and that expansion, and I probably left three or four off, but I don't mean to be unfair, and I've been paying attention to this for, I don't know, 63 years. I don't think anybody knows where we're going when you look at all those fronts together. I don't think anybody knows when we're going to get there, and I'm not sure they would know what it looked like when we got there. Am I being too harsh for right now?
No, I don't think you are at all.
Would you hazard to explain?
Well, because I just don't think there's any direction, and there's no leadership. And yeah, you know, I was asked. Somebody asked me earlier today about what Kliakoff said, and he's a little bit late to the party, saying that it's time for the NCAA to take over. Because how is the NCAA is made up of commissioners and presidents, and quite frankly, Pat, do you trust any of these people collectively, not individually, but collectively, to ever get anything done?
Well, I do have a comment and an observation about the collegial approach to solving problems.
Yes.
And you have both feet stuck in the mud, and mañana's always okay. So,
But Pat, ultimately, commissioners come from all walks of life. Some are bureaucrats that come up through the system. Others come from professional sports. Kliakoff came from the gambling world, I think, didn't he? College presidents mostly come from bottom up. They are bureaucrats. They are fundraisers. They are used to committees. They are used to being methodical. And that's not how you get things done in today's environment. CEOs can get things done overnight because they have to. And if they don't, they'll lose their jobs. In college, on the college campus, you're not under the gun. Every once in a while, you get a president who gets fired quickly, like the one at South Carolina a couple of years ago, who was a disaster. But most of the time, you can hold on to your job for a long time. Well, look at Mark Emmert. He's absolutely one of the most worthless leaders in the history of American business. He not only hung on to his job 12 or 13 years, but a year and a half ago, he got a contract extension by college presidents. Now he's being pushed out once it finally caught up to him. But what does he care? He's 70 years old. They'll buy him out. He's got a pension. And he's got the last laugh. And he left the industry in complete ruins, but nobody ever stopped him. There were a few critics along the way. The commissioners found religion way too late. We'll take a short break. Back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Victor, good afternoon.
Yeah, talking about Kirby Smart, man. I mean, he's a good coach, but I don't think he's the best in the SEC. He's done nothing with consistency, man. I mean, when he won national championship, everybody wanted to call him a god or whatever. I'm like, come on. You know?
Well, I don't know about that. To me, I think he's been pretty consistent.
Yeah, I mean, but hey, when you lose to South Carolina and stuff like that, Vanderbilt and all that, come on. I'm talking about over the years, Paul. He wins one national championship, and everybody thinks he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I'm like, come on.
I mean, if you give him his first season, which was a transitional year, he's finished second, seventh, fourth, seventh, and first. I would say that's pretty consistent in the world of college sports.
Yeah, it's not the best coach in the SEC and all this other stuff they're talking about.
Well, I agree that he's not, to me, the best coach, but he's certainly not far behind, and we'll have a guest on later.
No,
but
he's got a pretty
remarkable record. If you think about it, I mean, I know you can't really throw out that first year because it's part of his record, but 13-2, 11-3, 12-2, 8-2 in COVID, and 14-1 is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, he's a good coach. I have no problem saying that. He's a damn good coach. Well, I'm saying, like, you know, the best in the SEC? Come on.
Well, you know, Victor, I think a lot of these are projections, including today and in the future. And if you're looking, what you're seeing here, it's a transitional. I'll let the guest. I agree with you. Saban to me is a better coach today, but how much longer is the question? Red Dog is the guest. Hello, Red Dog.
Do you think Saban's a better coach today?
Yeah, I don't really think I need to answer that, considering I just said that to millions of people, yes.
Okay. Well, he's not a better coach today, Paul. Who won the national championship again?
You know, Red Dog, we have a really intelligent audience, so I'm not going to answer infantile questions
well, you really
everyone
don't,
in the audience, but you apparently
Alabama
know the answer
to. You got
Alabama
fans calling, and they're saying, 1-800, what? How about them dogs?
He asked me two stupid questions, right? Yeah. So I'm not going to, or am I going to, dignify his stupidity by asking the audience, is he or is he not the dumbest person you've ever heard?
He is.
Is? It?
He is.
Is? Is?
Is.
Is. By acclamation. Let's talk to Trey in Arkansas. Hello, Trey.
Howdy, Paul. I was wanting to know what Arkansas's pod would look like whenever Texas and Oklahoma move in.
You know, Trey, I think that's a tough question to answer for this reason. I don't think Texas will be in the pod. I think Texas will play Oklahoma, probably A&M, and then someone else. I think you're likely to see Missouri in there. Maybe A&M, LSU, perhaps. That would be my best judgment.
I'm hoping we get to play Texas every year. I think it'd be awesome.
Well, here's the problem, though. You're going to get Oklahoma and Texas. I think I would absolutely, bet whatever morsels are left in Red Dog's brain on that. And you're probably going to get, I think you're going to get A&M Texas, too, just because it's an important game. So Arkansas can't factor in there. I think LSU, I think Missouri from a geographical standpoint. But we are not there yet. Where we are is at the end of the first hour. We'll talk to Jim Donnan, the former Georgia coach, right after this.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.